I've brought you down to the water's edge, this little shingle beach. It's not particularly good weather today. It's blowing a bit of a gale and it's pouring down. But even in these conditions, the lake has a grandeur to it. It really wears bad weather very well indeed. Very lovely on a warm day. But what you can see beyond us here is in a way more like a long river. Windermere is the longest lake in England. Probably the most famous lake in England as well. It's got an amazing history. And that history is tied up with tourism and the heritage of tourism from its very earliest days in this country right the way up to the modern day. So we're going to go from here on a little mini tour around Fell Foot. This is one of the earliest villa estates built on Windermere and has an incredible story to tell as part of the wider transformation of Windermere as a place that was once a very, very remote lake with agriculture and woodland industries going along its shores to really being a national object, a place that was transformed over a period of 200 years into somewhere that could rival the great lakes of Europe. It's a place that served the needs of a very, very small number, the very, very wealthiest elite in this country, but part of the story of the democratisation of tourism. So we're going to go from historic merchant villa right the way through to 1960s caravan site, and we're going to end our tour with a visit to our vintage caravan. This is a fascinating story. Come on, follow me and we'll take a look. Hi, well, I'm Harvey Wilkinson. I'm a cultural heritage curator for the National Trust, and I cover the Lake District, not just the historic buildings, but also the wider landscape, and especially the designed landscapes and parklands, the villa landscapes of the Lake District. We've been talking about the heritage of tourism here on Windermere, and as part of our interpretation here at Fell Foot, we're covering almost the two extremes of that story. One part of that is, in a way, the very beginnings of that story. Just introduced you to Pip Hall, who's a stone carver and calligrapher, and she's carving out an extract from Wordsworth's The Prelude, really, really important poem in English literature, but also very important for Windermere, because this part of the poem describes some of Wordsworth's youthful experiences of Windermere. It's a lake that's very, very important to him. Wordsworth was really, really interesting in the way he described the transformation of Windermere, partly by the merchant villas that we've been talking about. That's one end of the spectrum. At the other end of the spectrum, which is what we've come here today to talk about, is a vintage caravan, 1960, 1970. The other end of scenic tourism in the Lake District. We're going to go to the other end and we're going to look at the site of the villa. This is one of the earliest villas built around Windermere. It was built at the end of the 18th century. And we're going to look at the place where it used to be, because it was knocked down at the turn of the 19th, 20th centuries. As the first tourists started to come to the Lake District to look at it for the sake of its scenery, what we call the discovery of the Lake District during the picturesque period, people straight away, as the landscape became revalued, started to build houses for pleasure, for the sake of the scenery. And Wordsworth wrote of this lake here that Belle Isle, I think 1774, was the first house built for the sake of the scenery in the Lake District. So that was the first villa. That's on the lake about halfway up. This was among 10 or 20 others that followed it relatively quickly afterwards. One of the words we use to describe them is a merchant villa. And the merchant's a bit of a catch-all term, but by and large, it wasn't the aristocracy. It was the rising middle classes and merchants of England who were prospering through the Industrial Revolution, industrial capitalism, as that grew, an empire. the merchant villa tells the story on Lake Windermere of all the things that fueled industrial capitalism in Britain. By 1860, the artist J.B. Pine was able to declare Windermere to be the Zurich of the North. It had achieved this almost international status by a kind of almost a collective project loosely formed up around these merchant villas. So there's an interesting sort of social contract thing happening here. If we look at the way the villa group developed, you can almost chart the development of industrial capitalism and empire in Britain. It's kind of hidden. It looks very rural and very quiet and beautiful. What you can't see is where the money came from. And of course, charting that story, we start with coal here at Fellfoot. One of the other early villas, Belisle, the Cohen family were into coal. You've got engineering, a next generation here at Fellfoot. The trade in enslaved people, Stores Hall, cotton, sugar, other industries connected with that trade. At Fellfoot, we have the industrial and military shipbuilding, great cruisers that were built to defeat the northern blockades of southern states in the American Civil War. Further up the lake still, we have gin and beer, the drinks used to slake the thirst of the same workers from Manchester. So again, another panorama of the development of industrial capitalism in Britain. Fundamentally, a villa is just the same as a Roman villa. It's a country residence of a city dweller. And the cities that we're talking about here are Manchester, Liverpool, Leeds, not exclusively, but mostly. So there's a very, very strong relationship between this lake, remote as it feels today on this windy morning, and the northern conurbations of England. They were holiday homes, and we all understand what that means. It's a place to escape the smog and smoke of your own industries in the cities. They were, to some extent, status symbols, but there were also places where those very, very wealthy urban classes could actually make footfall in the rural scene. They were fundamentally an urban social class, and their villas often say very, very strongly, I'm here, but also I've been here for a long time, which isn't necessarily the case. We're actually made our way now to Fellfoot's really, really interesting boathouse complex, probably the biggest and most significant in the Lake District, very much part of the Heritage Lottery Fund restoration project, which we've completed here. So we're going to walk out onto one of the larger decked landing in front of the largest of the boathouses. And when I say boathouse, it doesn't really describe what this is. This looks like a huge gateway to an enormous Gothic castle, but is in fact part boathouse, part banqueting hall. This is the grand entrance to the estate from the lake. In the 19th century, as the merchant villa landscape developed, a social scene developed around it, which involved people visiting each other's villas, and often as not, that would also be from the water, just as much as it would be from the roadside. So this best viewed as being a grand entrance rather than simply something just for launching boats from. These are very sociable buildings in that sense, and that's why they're very, very good today. And we heard the kids getting queued up for their boating trip. They're doing the job now that they did to some extent 100 years ago, just the same task. So we're going to leave the historic boathouse group now and walk further into the park, and we're going to sort of leave the late 18th century behind, and William Wordsworth and tourists in search of picturesque scenery. And we're going to move now to look at historic tourist infrastructure at the south end of Windermere and Fellfoot. And we're really looking at the period of the 1840s, 1850s. So the middle part of our story about historic tourism. So we're climbing the hill. And what's swinging into view now, and this is just the place where Windermere changes from a lake to a river. It's very, very beautiful. We're looking out across the rooftops of the boathouse group. And what you can see amongst the trees is the terminus of the Haverthwaite Railway, the Furness Railway. And to the right, you can see the terminus of the Windermere steamers and the Lakeside Hotel. That is a kind of panoramic spectacle of 19th century historic tourist infrastructure that still works. So if you look into the trees in the right time of day, you can see little puffs of smoke, the steam train coming through, connecting with these historic, not steamers anymore, but historic boats. So that's an amazing continuation of historic tourism. But it takes us to the middle of the 19th century, when a great debate rose up about the impacts of tourism in the Lake District. And that'll lead us on to the final part of our story. When steamboats and steam trains started to arrive, of course, it put this part of the Lake District in reach of the working populations of Manchester, Liverpool and Leeds. They're the people, to some extent, whose labour had actually created the wealth to carry out this great transformation on the lake. Suddenly, when the train arrives, those working populations descend upon the Lake District. Wordsworth, who we mentioned before in the prelude, is quite moving on now towards the end of his life. He writes about his anxieties about the coming of tourism to this part of the Lake District. He called it a rash assault. Another writer, Monckton Milnes, responded in print and sort of says, I'm paraphrasing him now, sort of says, can't the working populations of the north of England get some respite in this landscape? Can't we share it? And that, in a sense, is the beginning of a historic debate about tourism and the impacts of tourism that we're going to see expressed at the end of our story, which is the 1960s and our fantastic vintage caravan, which I'm going to take you to see right now. So I've brought you up now to the highest point in Felfort's design landscape, and this is actually where Felfort's villa once stood, demolished at the turn of the 20th century. The park was acquired by a new owner who decided to build a new house for his wife. His wife died and they abandoned the site. So I have a bit of a tale of abandonment here, but what we're looking at is an incredibly expansive view, even for a Windermere villa, because you encapsulate a long view of the lake with distant mountains. We can see the historic hotel and steamer terminal, and we can also see the broad sweep of the river as it winds its way out to sea. So this is the most advantageous spot in the park, and it's the spot where I'm going to introduce you to our historic caravan. It's a bit like a miniature villa on wheels. It's white, it turns up overnight, and doesn't have initially a massively strong relationship to the landscape that it stands in. So in a sense, we're going to look at how that debate, or part of that debate around tourism, was resolved here in the Lake District in the 1960s. Felfort had a very rough time after the war. The whole park was effectively bulldozed. Many of its woodlands were cut down, and it was leased out as a caravan site. The Lake District became a national park in 1951, and that very much fitted into the broader social contract, in a way, around national parks after the Second World War. The country was exhausted and they needed recreation. And this place, on the fringes of the Lake District, it seemed to make sense to build facilities here, because it meant that if you were towing your little caravan into the middle, you wouldn't get caught in traffic jams and create problems in the central part of the Lake District. It's actually long been policy in the Lake District not to widen roads. So it's an increasing problem, but then it was a problem too. In the late 1960s, Felfort became a country park. It was a designation that really allowed you to raise money and also develop sites much more towards kind of amenity and leisure facilities. The Trust built chalets up in the woods that were starting to regenerate, and they levelled some of these areas even more to take touring caravans, which were exploding in popularity at the time. So let's head towards our 1974 Castleton Rivanna, designed initially in the early 1960s. This is what everybody thinks of when you think of a vintage caravan. Painted white, just like the neoclassical villa that was here, that preceded it, obviously a lot smaller. Let's head on in. Okay, so come on in, come and get a cup of tea and a Viscount biscuit. Welcome to my caravan. This is the National Trust's most recent acquisition, beautifully preserved and actually beautifully restored, actually by the team here at Felfort. In a way, it does fulfil the same role as the 19th century villa, just much, much smaller and a little bit more portable. But for many generations here at Felfort, and we know from some of the social history work we've been doing, this was a chance to, you know, leave the urban environments a lot of these holidaymakers came from, and just for a few days. That we know from interviews with these holidaymakers, the sense of release when they opened the curtains on their caravan and looked out onto this incredibly beautiful scene. So this isn't a thing in a way that's been produced by machines. It's all coach built, and I think some of the trades of boat building have been employed in here. Lovely little cabinets, beautifully made little plywood things. So it's got a bit of a feel of a boat about it in some places, but also that some of the coach building trades that would historically have been used in the automotive industry as well. And this is a high-end caravan. This isn't the kind of caravan that I remember as a kid. This is a Castleton. This was a luxury van. And actually it looks like a caravan really from the early 60s rather than the mid-70s, but it was one of those caravans that just didn't change in its design. And it's one that hasn't had much use. We acquired it from an elderly gentleman who'd kept it in his garage for most of its life. It's beautiful, and it is a window into the materiality of the 60s and 70s. Now, I mentioned the plywood here, but this was from a time when plastic was great. You know, we hadn't realised the implications of plastic, and plastic was a problem solver. And so a lot of the fixtures and fittings in here, say, are plywood, but a lot of the crockery and other things are made of plastic in some fairly jazzy colours as well. Orange predominates. Anyone who remembers this period remembers the optimistic colour orange, contrasted sharply with mustard velour seats that we're sitting on here, and other shades of brown and beige. So what we're looking at here is an orange and cream coloured plastic picnic hamper divided into four different trays. So it's quite space age. It's quite Gerry Anderson, actually. There's a little holder for your wine glass there, for your blue mum, and four separate compartments for your lunch. Even little sort of caramel-coloured plastic knife and fork. So this really is state-of-the-art 1960s, 70s plastic, and I'm sure folks will remember some of this. Actually, some of the Tupperware that we have in here somehow is imprinted into my mind, because I recognised all of it instantly. Some of the crockery in here is Gaydon Mellorware, or Melmex, and that had a few virtues from a caravanning point of view, because it's very, very light, and it's not really a plastic, actually. It's a little bit older than that sort of technology. Again, brightly coloured red and orange, used almost universally in caravans. And I don't know if you remember these, but I certainly recall it. This is a vacuum jug, and you press the little button on the top, fit that down, and that keeps your Vimto cool, or it keeps your tea warm. Yeah, it's got everything you need. There's a little toilet, Elsan Portaloo, in this cupboard here. Let me show you. A little bit cramped. There we go. Complete with its own little frosted window. And here's the wardrobe. And this one is really posh, because right, if you look down at the bottom of the wardrobe, there's your wine cooler. Well, we've almost come full circle. We've tried to cover over 160 years worth of the heritage of tourism in the Lake District. In a sense, we can go back in a way to Wordsworth. You say, well, what's Wordsworth's prelude got to do with a caravan? But actually, in the prelude, Wordsworth's talking about the effect that, in the section we're looking at here, the effect that his childhood experiences had upon him as an adult and his development as an artist. And that's very much part, we take that for granted, but it's very much part of the Romantic movement. We know from our social history recording the effect that childhood experiences in particular had on generations of people in his caravans at Felfort. And we know the impact of it. Some of the kids describe coming from what they called concrete jungles, and opening the curtains, and their parents and carers allowing them to run out across the park. Some of them had red swallows and Amazons. And that idea of the Lake District as a literary landscape coming alive for them as they ran off down towards the lake. thanks for joining me on this tour of Fellfoot. And I think, all the history aside, there's something incredibly simple about this place, and it's about the universal enjoyment of being on a little shingle beach by the lake. I'm sorry I can't guarantee the weather, but come and see this place in full swing on a sunny day, and it's absolutely amazing. Or on a quiet evening, row across to the lakeside there, get a gin and tonic, row back again. It's a place that delivers so much for so many people. But it's also a place where, being a tourist, is you're part of heritage. You're not something just added later on. The activities that go on here are really part of the spirit of the place.